Welcome to Double Portion Inheritance with Maria Marola, brought to you by DoublePortionInheritance.com. Since 1981, Maria heard the call of Yahuwah to become a watchman to the house of Yisrael and to those within the traditional Christian church. She was instructed to warn them against the false doctrines and pagan traditions of men. After 25 years of studying Scripture, the word of Yahuwah came to Maria again in 2007 as she was called out of the corporate world to become a full-time intercessor and prophetic teacher. The name of the ministry, Double Portion Inheritance, was given to her after she received the revelation of the two houses of Yisrael from Ezekiel 37:16. The mission of this ministry is to bring together the stick of Judah and the stick of Joseph for the return of the Messiah, Yahushua. And now, Maria Marola.
Hello, Mishpoka, friends, family, and Messiah. Shabbat Shalom. Today is January the 8th, 2016, and I'm going to continue my teaching from last week entitled Jeremiah's Warning to the United States of America. Well, last week I was explaining that Yahuwah had a controversy with the nation of Israel, and he spoke through his prophet Yirmiyahu, Jeremiah, in verse 2, or in chapter 2, verses 11 through 13, he says that his people, Yahuwah's people, have committed basically two sins. He says, "You have forsaken the living water." And he says, "You have dug wells, broken and dry wells that cannot hold water." What does he mean by this? He says in Yirmiyahu or Jeremiah 2, verse 11, he says, "Has a nation changed their Elohim?" In the English, it's gods, of course, lowercase gods. But in the Hebrew, it's Elohim. "Has a nation changed their mighty ones," or Elohim, "which are yet no Elohim? But my people have changed their glory for that which does not profit." And he says, "Be astonished, O you heavens, at this, and be horribly afraid. Be you very desolate, says Yahuwah, for my people have committed two evils. They have forsaken me, the fountain of living waters, and hewed them out cisterns, broken cisterns that cannot hold water." You see, beloved, Yahuwah is saying, "They have forsaken me, the living water." The living water is obviously speaking of the one whose spirit is likened unto living water. And our Messiah, Yahushua, told the woman, the Samaritan woman, in the book of John, or Yehuchadon, that he was the one who could give her this living water. Listen to what he says, Yehuchadon, or John 4:10. "Yahushua answered and said unto her, if you knew the gift of Elohim, and who it is that says to you, give me to drink, you would have asked of him, and he would have given you living water." In the next verse, in verse 11, the woman said unto him, "Sir, you have nothing to draw with, and the well is deep. From where then have you this living water?" In verse 13, Yahushua answered and said to her, "Whosoever drinks of this water shall thirst again." In verse 14, he says, "But whosoever drinks of the water that I shall give him shall never thirst. But the water that I shall give him shall be in him a well of water springing up into everlasting life." In the Gospel of John, chapter 7, verse 38, it says, "He that believes on me, as the scripture has said, out of his belly shall flow rivers of living water." And also in Hazon, or Revelation 7, 17, it says, "For the Lamb which is in the midst of the throne shall feed them and shall lead them unto the living fountains of waters, and Elohim shall wipe away all tears from their eyes." You see, when the prophet Yirmiyahu or Jeremiah says that his people have forsaken the living waters, he is showing them that they have stopped placing their trust in Yahuwah. but instead they are placing their trust in other humans. In Jeremiah 17:5, Yahuwah says, "Cursed be the man that places his trust in man and makes flesh his arm, and whose heart departs from Yahuwah." In Jeremiah 17:7, he says, "Blessed is the man that trusts in Yahuwah and whose hope Yahuwah is." You see, in American culture today, we're seeing that even people who are followers of the Messiah are putting their trust in psychologists as their counselors. But Isaiah 9:6 tells us that the wonderful counselor is Yahushua, the son who's been born to us. He's the wonderful counselor. Many people are putting their trust in pharmaceutical drugs instead of choosing natural sources of healing that have been given to us by Yahuwah, our creator. He has given us every fruit-bearing tree in the garden for healing. He's given us healthy food to eat and essential oils that we can use, but instead, people are turning to medical science, which keeps on failing us over and over again. All these pharmaceutical drugs do is mask the symptoms, and people are becoming more sick by the day. There are married couples who profess to know the Messiah, yet they choose birth control because they fear they will not be able to provide for a large family. Even though in Genesis 1:22, Yahuwah commands us to be fruitful and multiply. Psalms 127:3 through 5 tells us that children are a heritage of Yahuwah, and the fruit of the womb is his reward to us. Yahuwah tells us that children are like arrows in the hand of a mighty warrior, and the man whose quiver is full of these arrows is likened unto the man who is blessed because he has many children. Yet, in our modern American culture, even those who profess Messiah are afraid of having too many children. Many people stop at two children, and then they practice birth control, or they have their reproductive abilities cut off so that they can continue to enjoy the pleasures of intimacy without bringing forth fruit from the womb. Beloved, we are commanded to be fruitful and multiply. This nation is obsessed with the pleasures of the flesh. This is why abortion is so huge in this nation. This is why all of the politicians are funding Planned Parenthood, because we are obsessed with sowing to the flesh. This nation has innocent blood on its hands, and Yahuwah has promised that he will not hold him guiltless who sheds innocent blood. This is the reason why Yahuwah calls us broken vessels. It is because as a nation, we are a shallow people who pretend that we want the living water, but we forsake that living water immediately when we see the chance to enjoy the pleasures of the flesh and the love of this present world. So why does Jeremiah use the analogy of broken cisterns? Well, you see, vessels that leak water are like unrepentant hearts. People who only give the appearance that they have repented during times of distress will oftentimes go back to their old sinful ways when they think that the danger of judgment is no longer upon them. An unrepentant heart is one who accepts the mercy and grace of Yahuwah, but he is like that dog that goes back to his old vomit, as we read in Proverbs 26:11 and 2 Peter 2:22. You see, broken cisterns are people who only give lip service, but they refuse to change their wicked ways for the long term. These are people who at first will drink of the fountains of living waters, or in other words, they are filled with the Ruach or the Spirit, but they fail to maintain a committed life of prayer and seeking the heart of Yahuwah. Ultimately, they will allow sin back into their lives, and they will grieve the Ruach HaKodesh until he departs from them. This is precisely what it means when he describes vessels who cannot hold water. In chapter 7, Jeremiah gives a direct warning from Yahuwah. He warns us to reform our ways and our actions. The prophet Malachi warns the same thing, but the people responded as if they did nothing wrong. So one must ask, what did Yahuwah mean when he said in Jeremiah 7:3, to amend your ways and your doings? Well, the Hebrew word amend is yatab. This word is translated in several English words, which are to amend, diligent, earnestly, and to be accepted. The word amend in this passage is the diligent and earnest effort of removing faults or errors. The next word is ways. The word ways in Hebrew is derech. This is translated trodden path, custom, highway, journey, manner, or way. Custom is defined as a common tradition so long established that it has the force or validity of law. Tradition is nothing more than unwritten religious precepts. The word doings is the Hebrew word ma'alal, and it means doing, endeavor, work, or invention. An invention is something fabricated that was previously unknown. So what does Jeremiah 7:3 say to us today as a nation? Well, to paraphrase, this is what Yahuwah is saying to the house of Judah in Jeremiah's day, and he's saying it again to America. He says, if you diligently and earnestly return to my commandments and instructions, in other words, Torah, and if you turn away from those fabricated man-made traditions patterned after Baal, you will be accepted. Elohim continues his warning. In Jeremiah 18:11, he states that he frames evil against us and he devises a device against those who will not listen. He's describing the same thing in Isaiah chapter 29, verse 13. Yahuwah says, for as much as this people draws near me with their mouth and with their lips do honor me, but have removed their heart far from me, and their fear toward me is taught by the precept of men. And then he says, therefore, behold, I will proceed to do a marvelous work among this people, even a marvelous work and a wonder. For the wisdom of their wise men shall perish, and the understanding of their prudent men shall be hid. And then in verse 15, he says, woe unto them that seek deep to hide their counsel from Yahuwah, and their works are in the dark. And they say, who sees us and who knows us? And then he goes on to say in verse 16, surely your turning of things upside down shall be esteemed unto me as the potter's clay. For shall the work say of him that made it, he made me not? Or shall the thing framed say of him that framed it, he has no understanding? In Mark chapter 7, our Messiah repeated the same warning of Yeshayahu or Isaiah. Listen to what he says. He says to the Pharisees and the scribes of his day, he says, well has Isaiah prophesied of you hypocrites, as it is written, this people honors me with their lips, but their heart is far from me. Howbeit in vain do they worship me, teaching for doctrines the commandments of men. For laying aside the commandment of Elohim, you hold the tradition of men, as the washing of pots and cups, and many other such things you do. And he said unto them, full well you reject the commandment of Elohim, that you may keep your own tradition. So you see, beloved, the message is universal throughout the entire scriptures. In the Old Testament or the Tanakh, we see the prophets of Israel warning the nation of Israel, the two southern tribes of the kingdom of Judah and the 10 northern tribes of the kingdom of the house of Ephraim. They all did the same thing. The prophet Amos warned Israel of the judgment that was coming because of their pagan holidays, which they invented under the leadership of King Jeroboam. Listen to what he says in Amos chapter 5, starting with 18. He says, woe unto you that desire the day of Yahuwah. To what end is it for you? The day of Yahuwah is darkness and not light. As if a man did flee from a lion and a bear met him, or went into the house and leaned his hand on the wall and a serpent bit him. Shall not the day of Yahuwah be darkness and not light? Even very dark and no brightness in it? And then he goes on and says, I despise your feast days, and I will not smell in your solemn assemblies. You see, I've heard Christians say to me that Yahuwah hates his own feast days. But beloved, that's not what he's talking about here. Whenever Yahuwah is talking about his appointed feasts, he calls them my feasts. But whenever he's talking about their pagan holidays, he says, I hate your feasts. He makes that distinction. I've actually heard people say to me that Isaiah 1:11 is a warning that Yahuwah hates his own feast days. I've heard Christians say to me that Isaiah 1:11 is all about Yahuwah hating his own Jewish, so-called Jewish holidays. Listen to what it says. To what purpose is the multitude of your sacrifices unto me, says Yahuwah? I am full of the burnt offerings of rams and the fat of fed beasts, and I delight not in the blood of bullocks or of lambs or of he-goats. When you come to appear before me, who has required this at your hand, to tread my courts, bring no more vain oblations. Incense is an abomination unto me. The new moons and the Sabbaths, the calling of assemblies, I cannot away with. It is iniquity, even the solemn meeting. Your new moons and your appointed feasts my soul hates. They are a trouble unto me. I am weary to bear them. Beloved, he's not speaking of his own feasts. His own feasts, he calls them my feasts. In Leviticus 23, he says, these are my feasts. So how do we know in Isaiah 1:11 that he's referring to the pagan holidays? Because he refers to them as your feasts rather than his feasts. And a lot of people will try to rationalize, well, you know, this is Israel. Israel kept all the feasts. No, they didn't. They didn't always keep the feasts, beloved. In 1 Kings chapter 12, the kingdom of Judah and the kingdom of Israel split. They became two separate nations. And King Jeroboam influenced the people, the 10 northern tribes of the house of Israel. He influenced them not to go to Jerusalem to keep the pilgrimage feasts, but instead he erected a golden calf at Mount Ephraim and at Dan. And incidentally, I believe that's the reason why Dan and Ephraim are not mentioned as the 12 tribes in Revelation chapter 7. However, beloved, I do believe that the house of Ephraim and the house of Dan can still be born again and saved, but they must come through the house of Judah. They must come through the gate called Judah or Yehuda. And so let's go back to what I was reading in the book of Amos. He said, I despise your feast days. And he says, and I will not smell in your solemn assemblies. Though you offer me burnt offerings and your meat offerings, I will not accept them. Neither will I regard the peace offerings of your fat beasts. And then he says, take you away from me the noise of your songs, for I will not hear the melody of your violins, your viols. Then he says, but let judgment run down as waters, and righteousness as a mighty stream. Have you offered unto me sacrifices and offerings in the wilderness for 40 years, O house of Israel? But you have borne the tabernacle of your Moloch and your Kuhn, your images, the star of your God, which you have made to yourselves. Therefore will I cause you to go into captivity beyond Damascus, says Yahuwah, whose name is the Elohim of hosts. Did you see this, American Christian? Yahuwah says, I hate your feasts. He's not referring to his feasts. In Amos chapter 7, starting with verse 8, it says, and Yahuwah said unto me, Amos, what do you see? And I said, a plumb line. Then said Yahuwah, behold, I will set a plumb line in the midst of my people Israel. I will not again pass by them any more. and the high places of Yitzhak or Isaac shall be desolate, and the sanctuaries of Israel shall be laid waste, and I will rise against the house of Jeroboam with the sword. Then Amatziahu or Amaziah the priest of Bethel sent to Jeroboam, king of Israel, saying, Amos has conspired against you in the midst of the house of Israel. The land is not able to bear all his words. Now, what did King Jeroboam do that brought him under such judgment? Well, in order to get the full picture, we must go back to 1 Kings chapter 12. In this chapter, we learn that after King David's son Solomon died, the two kingdoms of Israel were divided. There was the northern kingdom of Israel under King Jeroboam, and he had 10 tribes underneath him. And then there was the southern kingdom of Judah under King Rehoboam, and he had 2 tribes of Judah and Benjamin underneath him. King Jeroboam was afraid that the other 10 tribes would obey the commandments of Yahuwah by visiting Jerusalem 3 times per year to keep the feasts. These feasts are outlined in Leviticus 23. He reasoned to himself that if these Israelites visited Jerusalem 3 times per year to honor the feasts of Yahuwah, that they would come under the leadership of King Rehoboam, and thus they would forsake him. In order to avoid this, King Jeroboam invented other pagan holidays that deviated from the Torah, or the instructions of Yahuwah. Let's read it. 1 Melakim, or 1 Kings 12, starting with verse 27. If this people go up to do sacrifice in the house of Yahuwah at Yerushalayim, or Jerusalem, then shall the heart of this people turn again unto their Lord, even unto Rehoboam, king of Yehudah, and they shall kill me and go again to Rehoboam, king of Yehudah, or Judah. Verse 28 says, whereupon the king took counsel and made 2 calves of gold and said unto them, it is too much for you to go up to Yerushalayim. Behold your gods, O Israel, which brought you up out of the land of Mitzrayim, or Egypt. And he set the one in Bethel, and the other he put in Dan. And this thing became a sin, for the people went to worship before the one, even unto Dan. And he made a house of high places, and made priests of the lowest of the people, which were not of the sons of Levi. And Jeroboam ordained a feast in the 8th month, on the 15th day of the month, like unto the feast that is in Yehudah, and he offered upon the altar. So did he in Bethel, sacrificing unto the calves that he had made, and he placed in Bethel the priests of the high places which he had made. Verse 33 says, so he offered upon the altar which he had made in Bethel, the 15th day of the 8th month, even in the month which he had devised of his own heart, and ordained a feast unto the children of Israel, and he offered upon the altar and burnt incense. As you can see here, King Jeroboam devised pagan holidays from his own heart, and he made up holidays that deviated from the Torah, the instructions of our Creator. This is precisely what the papacy has done within Christianity. And now the United States of America is set for judgment because we have standardized these pagan holidays. Christmas, Easter, Valentine's Day, St. Patrick's Day, Halloween, and we've made them national holidays. Now, I can almost hear what's going on in the minds of many of you as you're hearing this. You're thinking to yourself, oh, come on, Maria, there are worse sins than pagan holidays. What about abortion? What about homosexual marriage? What about all the other things that are going on in America? What about ISIS? What about Islam? I know that you're thinking these things and you're saying to yourself, aren't those things worse than us Christians keeping pagan holidays, even though we do it out of ignorance and we do it without realizing that they're pagan holidays? What if we use these pagan holidays to win people to Christ? I know that's what many of you might be thinking. Okay, we're going to take a short intermission. Don't go away. Okay, so beloved, before the commercial break, I was explaining to you that I know there are people out there asking this question, posing this question to themselves and saying, oh, come on, Maria, you seem to think that judgment is coming to America because of the pagan holidays that we celebrate? There are many worse sins out there than pagan holidays. I know that's what some of you are thinking. You are thinking, well, what about abortion? What about rape, murder? What about drugs? What about gangs? What about homosexuality? And I know you're thinking these sins seem to be far worse in our way of thinking, in our economy. But in the economy of our Creator, Yahuwah, he sees things totally differently. You see, he sees that the commandments are based upon our relationship to him. And in Exodus or Shemot chapter 20, we see the 10 words or the 10 commandments that he gave to Moshe. And the very first commandment is, I am Yahuwah, your Elohim, which have brought you out of the land of Mitzrayim, or Egypt, out of the house of bondage. You shall have no other Elohim or mighty ones before me. Now, this word before in Hebrew is panim, and it means in my face. I don't want you to worship these false pagan gods in my face. In other words, I don't want to see it. I don't want to know about it. Get it away from me. That's what he's really saying. I used to think that this word before meant you shall have no other pagan gods in front of me, meaning, you know, I have to come first. And then, of course, if you want to worship other ones, be, you know, after me, that's fine, but I have to be number one. You know, of course, as a child, that's how I took it. When I would hear this commandment, he was saying, you can have other pagan gods, just I have to be number one. You know, no, that's not what he's saying. The word before means I want this stuff out of my face. I don't even want you to bring it near me. He's a jealous husband. He views the nation of Israel as his bride. And if we're born again by the blood of the Lamb, the blood of Messiah, we are part of that bride. And he is a jealous husband. He will not share his glory with another. And so, beloved, the first commandment is we are not to have any other gods or mighty ones before him. And so that's the number one commandment. All the other commandments come second, third, fourth, fifth, and on down the line. So the order of these Ten Commandments starts with the order of their importance. So if we violate the first commandment, which is to celebrate pagan holidays that are patterned after false pagan gods, what are we doing? We are violating that first commandment. And once we violate that first commandment, it is then easy to violate commandment number two, which is to make graven images of these pagan gods. And then it becomes easy for us to bow down to them. And then if we continue to do that, then it should be easy to take his name in vain, which means not to pronounce his name. In other words, we can lump him in with all the other pagan deities and just call him by a vain title such as Lord. Okay, Lord is a title. Did you know that 7,000 times, almost 7,000 times, the scribes removed our Creator's name from the scriptures and they inserted Lord, whereas it used to be Yahuwah, the tetragrammaton, the four Hebrew letters that make up his name, Yod, He, Wah, He. Those are the four Hebrew letters that make up his name, Yahuwah. That's what it means to take his name in vain. The word vain is the Hebrew word shav, and it means, in the sense of desolating, it means idolatry. In other words, we are not to call him by the same name that we call these other pagan gods. You see, the nation of Israel did the same thing. In Hosea chapter 2, we read about the fact that they called all of their pagan gods Baal. Beloved, do you know what Baal means? It means Lord. It means husband. So in modern day Christianity, when we refer to him as Lord, what are we doing? We are putting him on the same level as all these other false pagan gods, just like Israel called Yahuwah Lord or Baal. So he didn't want to be called by just any old title because there's no distinction. It would be the same thing as a woman who was a prostitute at one time. Now she's repented and she's married, and she calls her husband Mr. Instead of calling him by his name, she calls him Mr. But this woman who had been a prostitute called every man on the street Mr. So when she calls her husband Mr., he doesn't feel special. He doesn't feel exclusive because she referred to all her old lovers as Mr. That's how he feels about the title Lord. In 1 Corinthians 8:5, the apostle Shaul or Paul declared that there are many lords and many gods, but he's referring to false pagan gods, of course. And so if there are many gods and many lords, we should not be calling our Creator by these vain, empty titles. This is what it means to take his name in vain. We are not to call him by the same vain, empty titles that we refer to these other pagan gods by. In other words, Baal, which also means Lord. So now I'm going to explain to you the origin of all of these pagan Sabbaths. You see, if you take a look at my blog at my website, doubleportioninheritance.com, you'll see the illustration. It's called the Witch's Pagan Sabbath Wheel, and it looks just like a wagon wheel or a pie. It's cut into 8 sections, and each of these holidays today has taken on the identity of a so-called Christian holiday. But these so-called Christian holidays originated at the Tower of Babel, and they were used as special high holy days where they believed that it was the best time to offer up babies to the pagan god named Moloch. Moloch means king, and in today's Freemasonry, they call him Baphomet or Ha-Satan, Satan. And so these pagan rituals continue today, just as they did in the days of the Tower of Babel 4,000 years ago. People still continue to celebrate these pagan holidays, and they offer children up on the altar to Satan. And so let me run through these holidays, these pagan holidays, on the witch's wheel. The first one is called Imbolc, otherwise known as St. Valentine's Day. It runs its course from February the 2nd through February the 15th. Originally, it was known as Baalentine's Day. That's right. Valentine's Day was originally named after Baal, Baal, Baalentine's Day. February the 15th marked the 40th day following his mother Semiramis's purification. You see, in the Torah, it says that a woman has 40 days of purification following the birth of a male child. And so since Nimrod was supposedly reincarnated at the winter solstice on December 25th, 40 days later would land precisely on February the 14th or Baalentine's Day. Later on during Imperial Rome, the day was named Lupercus, the day of the wolf. The second pagan holiday on the witch's wheel is called Ostara or Easter, and it starts at the vernal equinox in the spring on March 21st through the 25th. Rome changed the date of Easter to make sure that it falls during Passover week because the Roman Catholic Church believes that Mary, or Miriam, the mother of our Messiah, is the Queen of Heaven. They've changed her identity to the pagan goddess of fertility known as the Queen of Heaven. And they believe that she participated in the crucifixion with Messiah. They also believe that she resurrected. And this falls right in line with the ancient pagan myth that Nimrod's mother, Semiramis, died and resurrected during the vernal equinox on Easter in the spring. And so all they did was borrow the same ancient pagan religion, and they just gave it new biblical names. As a matter of fact, Constantine the Roman Emperor in the 3rd century changed the statue of Venus to the statue of Mary. He just changed the name. And so the ancient mystery religion from the Tower of Babel just kept migrating from one culture to another culture under different names, but basically it's the same myth. It's the same story. And so Easter is repulsive to our Creator because every year on the vernal equinox on Easter, the pagans offer babies up to her and they dye eggs in the blood of these sacrificed infants. So this is where the spirit of abortion comes from, beloved. The next pagan holiday on the witch's wheel is called Beltane or Mayfest. It begins on May 1st. It's also called May Day or the Day of the Goddess of Fertility. She is also known as Semiramis in Babylon. Isis in Egypt, Diana in Ephesus, Venus in Rome, and she was renamed Mary by the Roman Catholic Church. She is also called the Queen of Heaven in many cultures, to include the Roman Catholic Church. If you want to see more about the Queen of Heaven, please read Jeremiah chapter 7 and Jeremiah chapter 44, where Yahuwah was angry with the nation of Israel because they were burning incense in offering up cakes to this pagan goddess of fertility known as the Queen of Heaven. I remember as a child in the first grade being 6 years old, and the Catholic nuns would decorate this pole called a maypole. And in ancient biblical times, they called this an Asherah pole. And they decorated the pole, and there was a statue of Mary in the center of the maypole. And all of us children had to dance around the maypole, and we had to wrap ribbons around the pole, and we had to decorate the statue of Mary with flowers and honor her and basically worship her, worship a graven image of Mary. So now we understand the Roman Catholic Church has adopted the ancient mystery religion. This is why we know in Revelation 17 that this woman who sits on seven hills is called Mystery Babylon the Great, the mother of harlot. Okay, the fourth pagan holiday on the witch's wheel is called Midsummer Solstice, or the first day of summer. It is on June 21st. The Catholic Church renamed it St. John's Day. I'm not quite sure why they named it that. Then the fifth one is called Lugnazad. It falls on August the 1st, and it runs its course through August the 15th. The Roman Catholic Church calls this the Mary's Ascension Day. In other words, the Roman Catholic Church teaches that the mother of our Messiah, named Miriam or Mary, died, and that she was crucified with him, that she participated in the crucifixion, and they say that she too resurrected. So they falsely teach that she ascended back to the Father, and we have no record of this in scripture. Nevertheless, this is what this pagan holiday is called, Lugnazad, in the witch's Celtic lingo. But in the Roman Catholic Church, it's called the Ascension of Mary. And I remember celebrating this holiday when I was a child in the Roman Catholic Church. And then, of course, there's Mabon. Mabon is the first day of autumn, and it begins on September 21st. And then there's Samhain, or Halloween, which is also called All Saints Day by the Roman Catholic Church. And that's on October 31st. The Roman Catholic Church believes that this is the best day of the year to honor the dead. But we are told in Deuteronomy 18 not to do rituals for the dead. We are not to pray to them. We are not to pray to the dead, communicate with the dead. We are not to do things for the dead. And the pagans do these things. And then finally, we have the pagan holiday known as Yule among the Celtic witches and pagans, but the Roman Catholic Church calls it Christmas. It is supposedly the birthday of all the false Christs, and it starts at the winter solstice on December 21st and runs its course through December 25th. The Yule wheel is a pagan representation of all the annual celebrations offered up to the pagan sun god and moon goddess in their many different reincarnated forms. The wheel has eight segments signifying eight pagan Sabbaths each year, and there's a five-pointed star of witchcraft, which is also called the Eastern Star, and the star is within a circle because the circle represents the pagan sun god. Now, I want to also talk about burning incense to idols. You see, the prophet Yirmiyahu or Jeremiah identifies another problem that we have in America, which is the sin of smoking cigarettes and marijuana. Not only are these substances harmful to the body due to carcinogens, but smoking these substances is more than just something that's harmful to the physical body. Smoking these substances attracts fallen angels and demons. Now, I don't have time to get into all of this, but I do recommend that you read my article entitled Strange Fire and the Queen of Heaven: Deliverance from Smoking, and you will be surprised to find out that both cigarette smoking and marijuana smoking have origins in pagan sun god worship. You see, smoking the substance alters the mind and brings one into an altered state of consciousness, which then allows demons or fallen angels in to possess the mind and ultimately the soul, body, and spirit. In many pagan religions, tobacco and cannabis are smoked as offerings to the Queen of Heaven. One of the pot goddesses is named Shiva in the Hindu religion of India. The Roman Catholic Church has attached the identity of this false goddess to the mother of our Messiah named Miriam, but they also refer to her as Mary, Queen of Heaven. No surprise, since in Jeremiah 7, I'm going to read this to you, starting with verse 9. It says, "Will you steal, murder, and commit adultery, and swear falsely, and burn incense unto Baal, and walk after other gods whom you know not? Therefore, pray not for you, for this people, neither lift up cry nor prayer for them, neither make intercession to me, for I will not hear you. See you not what they do in the cities of Yehuda or Judah, in the streets of Jerusalem? The children gather wood, and the fathers kindle the fire, and the women knead their dough to make cakes to the Queen of Heaven, and to pour out drink offerings unto other gods, that they may provoke me to anger." In verse 19, he says, "Do they provoke me to anger? Says Yahuwah, do they not provoke themselves to the confusion of their own faces?" Verse 20 says, "Therefore, thus says Yahuwah Elohim, behold, my anger and my fury shall be poured out upon this place, upon man and upon beast, and upon the trees of the field and upon the fruit of the ground, and it shall burn and shall not be quenched." In verse 28, he says, "But you shall say unto them, this is a nation that obeys not the voice of Yahuwah, their Elohim, nor receives correction. Truth is perished and is cut off from their mouth." In verse 30, he says, "For the children of Yehuda or Judah have done evil in my sight, says Yahuwah. They have set their abominations in the house which is called by my name to pollute it. And they have built the high places of Tophet, which is in the valley of the son of Hinnom, to burn their sons and their daughters in the fire, which I commanded them not, neither came it into my heart. And the carcasses of this people shall be meat for the fowls of heaven and for the beasts of the earth, and none shall fray them away. Then will I cause to cease from the cities of Yehuda or Judah and from the streets of Jerusalem the voice of mirth and the voice of gladness, the voice of the bridegroom and the voice of the bride, for the land shall be desolate." Beloved, this is exactly what is about to happen to the United States of America. It is because the majority of the Christian leaders in the church have abandoned the Torah, the Mosaic Law. We have seen the Ten Commandments removed out of our public schools, places of government, and courtrooms. The result of this has been unprecedented lawlessness and a major decline in morality in our nation. American Christians must take heed to this warning. Repent and come out of her, my people, that you partake not of her sins and that you receive not of her plagues. Who is this woman he's referring to? Beloved, this woman is a church that sits on seven hills. Revelation 17:9 describes her as a woman who is clothed in scarlet and purple, and she has a golden cup in her hand full of abominations and filthiness. And she had a name written on her forehead, Mystery Babylon the Great, the mother of harlots. Beloved, there are seven hills that surround the Vatican City of Rome. And I know I've heard all the excuses where people say, oh, that's talking about Mecca and there's seven mountains that surround Mecca. But beloved, that doesn't apply because Mecca does not have a woman or a church sitting on seven hills. Those seven mountains have nothing there except for sand dunes. No, there is an actual woman, a church, someone who says she is the bride of Christ, someone who says she is married to the Messiah. She calls herself a woman. She calls herself a prophetess. In Revelation chapter 2, Yahushua compared her to Queen Jezebel, who calls herself a prophetess. The word Vatican in Latin means prophetess. This woman is the Vatican. She calls herself the bride of Christ. She calls herself a prophetess, but she has other pagan gods. She has other lovers, just like ancient Israel when they worshiped their Baalim, They're false pagan deities. And so, beloved, this woman, Mystery Babylon the Great, the mother of harlots, teaches the servants of Yahuwah to eat things sacrificed to idols and to commit fornication. And that not only means physical fornication, but spiritual fornication, which is idolatry. Listen to the warning that our Messiah gives this congregation at Thyatira. And he starts out by commending them for their charity. In Revelation 2:19, he says, I know your works and your charity and your service and your faith and your patience and your good works. And the last to be more than the first. Notwithstanding, I have a few things against you because you suffer that woman Jezebel, which calls herself a prophetess, to teach and seduce my servants to commit fornication and to eat things sacrificed unto idols. And I gave her space to repent of her fornication, and she repented not. Behold, I will cast her into a bed, and them that commit adultery with her into great tribulation, except they repent of their deeds, and I will kill her children with death, and all the assemblies shall know that I am he which searches the reins and hearts. And I will give unto every one of you according to your works. But unto you, I say, and unto the rest in Thyatira, as many as have not this doctrine, and which have not known the depths of Satan, as they speak, I will put upon you none other burden, but that which you have already. Hold fast until I come. Well, beloved, that concludes the message for this week, and I just want you to know that if you are interested in receiving 60 of my ebooks on a flash drive, I can make that available to you. Just write to me at doubleportioninheritance@gmail.com, and in the subject line, just write flash drive bracelet. I have two versions. You can receive the bracelet with the Father's name on it in ancient Paleo Hebrew letters. Also in English letters, it says Yahuwah in English, and it also has it in the Paleo Hebrew pictograph letters. And it's a bracelet. It wraps around your wrist, and on the bracelet are 60 of my ebooks. For a minimum donation of $60 to this ministry, I will send you the flash drive bracelet. The flash drive bracelet features our Creator's name, Yahuwah, in English letters and also in ancient Paleo Hebrew letters. And it's a great witnessing tool. People will often ask me, what is that on your wrist? And it opens up a conversation. I'm able to share the faith of Yahushua HaMashiach with them and the Torah. And also, I have the flash drive available as a regular thumb drive that hangs from your neck on a lanyard. If you would prefer that version, just let me know, write to me, and give me your address, and make a PayPal donation to doubleportioninheritance@gmail.com. Until next week, may Yahuwah bless you and keep you. Yahuwah make his face shine upon you and be gracious unto you. Yahuwah lift up his countenance upon you and give you shalom.
We hope you enjoyed today's broadcast and that you are encouraged in your walk with Messiah through the teaching. To visit Maria's website and download the MP3 version of this teaching, visit doubleportioninheritance.com. That's www.doubleportioninheritance.com. This ministry is made possible through the prayers and support of listeners like you. If you would like to make a donation to Double Portion Inheritance, write to Maria Marola, P.O. Box 231161, Sacramento, California 95823. That's P.O. Box 231161, Sacramento, California 95823, or via the PayPal donate button at doubleportioninheritance.com. On behalf of Maria and all the ministry team at Double Portion Inheritance, may Yahuwah bless you.